So, welcome everyone. This is the fifth episode of Nixie Meets. Today, I have the pleasure to interview Kara Kimball. She's a mother and certified child life specialist. She's passionate about helping kids cope with medical experiences, and she shares her tips on her blog, Child Life Saver. Good morning, Kara. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm excited to be here.
It's a pleasure for us that you accepted this interview. I wanted to start with a question that I asked a lot of child life specialists, and you all have amazing stories to tell. So I would love to know your story about how did you get involved in the child life world?
Sure. It was a fluke. The state in the United States where I'm from, Utah, doesn't have a lot of child life specialists in it. And there isn't a lot of training opportunities there. So my friend actually went on a trip with Operation Smile. I don't know if you've heard of them.
Yeah.
We were in high school, and she came back and said, there's this profession, there's this child life specialist there, and I think you would love it. And so when I got to college, I asked around, and nobody at my university knew what it was. And so I kind of had to do the digging on my own. But once I found it, I started volunteering at a children's hospital. And once I started doing that, I fell in love with it, and I knew that it would be perfect for me.
That's amazing. And do you think this is changing? Do you think there's more child life specialists out there right now, that people is getting more interested in this?
Absolutely. It kind of started, in the 1960s, it was very slow growing to start, but now it's definitely expanding. There are opportunities to become a child life specialist online, and every children's hospital in the United States currently has at least one child life specialist on staff. But I think as all of the hospitals are recognizing what a benefit child life specialists are to them, they're finding ways to increase their the salary need, right? So they're asking for donations to fund those positions.
I'm sure that the child life job in a hospital, it must be cost efficient, right? Because that's something
it
they
is.
Talk about a lot in hospitals, cost efficiency. And how do you think there's studies about studying the cost efficiency of child life?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. There actually are. There was a big statement that was put out this year that was done by a bunch of child life specialists, and they looked at all of the studies that showed how cost efficient they are for hospitals. Aside from the cost efficiency, and actually to pair with it, there's less sedation use, there's less anesthesia use, and less narcotic pain medication given. And so this is better for patient safety. Kids are put through or come in and out of the hospital faster, so that's more cost efficient for the hospital, and they have to use less staff to work with these kids, so that's more cost efficient for them. I know that after kids receive anesthesia, they leave quicker, so there's significant cost savings for hospitals, and that's one of the reasons why they really value child life specialists.
Yeah. That's so true. And there's another thing, that child life specialists are useful not only when a child needs surgery, right? There's a lot of moments in a child's life that knowing something about child life as a parent can help your child, right?
Absolutely. That's one of the reasons why I started my blog and Instagram account, was to help parents have a few of these skills in their back pocket, so that whenever they take their child to get a flu shot or anything like that, that they feel prepared. It's difficult because while we are getting more child life specialist positions, most of them are inpatient children who receive a child life specialist. There just isn't enough funding yet for there to be that many child life specialists to see the outpatient kids. So the kids who go for same day surgeries or tests or procedures, a lot of times those are the kids that get missed, or even just a procedure at like their primary care provider, the pediatrician. So all of, when you take your child to the pediatrician, they often don't have a child life specialist on staff. I would say probably never. So it's hard because kids go to the ER all the time. They have procedures and surgeries all the time, as you know. But these are the kids who aren't getting child life specialists. And so that's one of the reasons why I really wanted to get the education out there.
Of course. And what are the kind of childs who do get the child life treatment? What do you think are the treatments inside the hospital that are being prioritized right now?
That's a really good question. The things we prioritize are, like, surgery would be a big one, right? We have, at least at the hospital where I worked, we had quite a few child life specialists in the pre-surgery area to help prepare kids for surgery because that's such a big one. But also, we would prioritize, like, intensive care units. And then, you know, let's say like the hospital where I worked, we had a child life specialist in every area of the hospital, except all of the outpatient, same day places. But among that you have, you know, 20 to 30 kids that you're in charge of.
So you were saying you have 20 to 25 children on your purview, right?
Okay. Yeah. So you might have 20 to 30 children that you're in charge of, and you can't see all of those kids in a day. So we prioritize even the patients that we are supposed to be monitoring as well. We prioritize kids who are under five. They're at most at risk for, you know, negative outcomes after the hospital. So kids under five, procedures and surgeries are a big one. We would definitely see a child who's having a procedure or surgery. Or someone who might have like a life-threatening illness, you know, a new diagnosis, or maybe they had a traumatic event and they lost a limb. Kids who go through those very big, big life-changing things would be top of our priority list.
Of course. Because what are the chances that one of these kids that's in a super hard situation, like losing a limb, whatever, and if this child has not the opportunity to have a child life specialist to help him or her during that process, what are the chances that this may cause some kind of trauma or kind of bad consequences for their health?
Yeah, I don't know the exact, you know, percentage or how that looks, but we are educated in trauma and its impact on children, and they really are at risk, and so that's why we would just highly prioritize them. I think the interesting thing is that there's research to show that whether a child's in the hospital for, you know, several months or weeks or days, they might have the same negative outcomes as a child who just goes to the ER for one, you know, for a few hours, and they don't even spend overnight at the hospital. Because some of these kids, you know, are a little more at risk for the negative outcomes. Family aspects play into that, how the child usually copes or their temperament. You know, there's so many things that play into it. Also, the care that they receive while they're at the hospital, you know, if they're prepared beforehand, you know, that makes a big difference. So it's interesting. You'd think that, you know, a child who stays several days in the hospital would have far more negative outcomes than a child who just visits for a few hours. But the research shows that that child can have the same negative outcomes. And that's why we even prioritize the emergency department.
Of course.
And those procedures.
You talked about parents. So what do you think that should be the parents' role? Imagine a hospital that doesn't have a child life specialist present, like it happens a lot in Spain, for example.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think that should be the parents' role regarding the visit to the hospital?
I think it's hard because we go to a hospital, we pay money for our child to be taken care of. And so I think in most parents' minds, we assume that we're going to be getting the highest quality of care. In my mind, and even still after all that I've gone through, I believe that that includes education and pain control and all of that. Unfortunately, that's the biggest gap, I believe, in our health system. There's research that just came out that shows that, or it was showing parent perspectives and medical staff perspectives on whose job it was to manage. Unfortunately, the parents thought it was the medical staff's job, and the medical staff thought it was the parents' job. So that just shows that pain management isn't happening. We're not doing our best to manage pain. And I think that's one of the problems, is that we assume that it's someone else's role. I do believe as parents, we often will prepare our kids for things, you know, if we understand that it's going to help them. But in the medical environment, we are so vulnerable, and it's such a stressful time that almost all of our parenting skills go out the window. You know, we just want to do everything for our child in that moment, but we're also nervous about the outcome. And so we might not even think to prepare our child for what's about to happen because we're so worried about how they're doing. So I think that, and also parents who have kids with anxiety think that if they tell them what's going to happen, then the child's going to have a worse time, but it's actually the opposite. So it, I think, and you probably know this as well, Thomas, but preparation for procedures is something that parents don't realize is so important. And even the medical staff doesn't realize is so important. And so it's a challenge to educate both on how they can both work together to help the child. I think it's a team effort. But I do think there's more responsibility lies in the medical staff's hands, because we go to them as the professional to help our child through this. So, and I hope that as we get more child life specialists on staff, then we'll be able to bridge that gap better, so that we can be kind of the liaison between parents and medical staff to kind of bridge that gap.
Of course. There's something that we find a lot, is that once while we're trying to bridge that gap, there's a lot of kind of parents, right? But there's some kind of parents that look interesting to me, because they want to help their children. They understand the importance of preparation, but they're not sure about how to do it. And they think if they explain too much, maybe that will be something that's wrong for the child. So they just are kind of, they're kind of blocked between two positions, and they don't know how to start. What would be your advice for these kind of parents who understand the importance and want to help but don't know how to start?
You bring up a good point, and I think that is the hardest thing for parents, because if I didn't have this education, I don't know that I would know how to prepare my child at all. It's challenging because and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to educate on my, on my account, because I think it is such a spectrum, right? You have the parents who want to show all the gory details. They want, you know, those dads that want to show all the pictures. Do you want to watch the surgery? That is not helpful for children. And then you have the other dads who are like, oh, it's going to be great. It's going to be fine. I shouldn't just put it on dads. It's moms too. But dads tend to like the gory details more than moms. But then you have the parents who are like, oh, everything's going to be great. You're going to do just fine, you know, and it's too happy. We need somewhere in the medium. We need, or in the middle. We need someone, we need parents who are saying, yeah, this is difficult, but I know that you can do it because you know how to rise above challenges, and we're going to do it together. What I would tell them is tell them only what they are going to experience. So if your child's going to go for surgery, you don't need to tell them what's going to happen after they're asleep, except for what the doctor's actually doing. So your tonsils are going to be taken out. When you wake up, they'll be gone. Your body doesn't miss them. You don't need them anymore. And when you wake up, you might have a little bit of a sore throat. You're not going into, oh, they're going to take a scalpel and, you know, you got to cut it out. That is too much information. So I would say give them honest information, but keep it soft language. We call it soft and minimally threatening language. So rather than saying they're going to cut out your tonsils, we say they're going to remove your tonsils. Or if a child doesn't understand that, we say take out. It's just a little bit gentler language, but still gets the same message across. So I would say tell them only what they're going to experience. Use soft and minimally threatening language. Use play to prepare them. play is the best way to prepare your child. Use it on a doll, watch a video like Nixie for Children is a great tool, and show pictures of maybe the hospital environment. Another thing I would say is walk them through the whole experience. Sometimes we just focus on the procedure or the surgery when we need to do it start to finish. So what are they going to see when they walk into the hospital? What are they going to have to put on? What are they going to hear? What are they going to taste? And what are they going to feel? Are they going to get a checkup before it starts? Who's going to come to see them? Is there going to be lots of equipment there that's not there for them? These are all details, though, that you're going to give more and more as the child is older. So give less details to younger children generally, more details to older children. And then children with a lot of anxiety need less details as well. And they also need to be prepared closer to the surgery. So you just want to keep it really honest and open. And at the end, the best thing you can do is say, what questions do you have? Because it opens up conversation for the child to then ask whatever questions they have. And oftentimes, what you gave is enough information, even if it was very little. And other kids need more information. And so that's when they'll say, well, how did they take it out? And that's when you go, okay, we need to give a little bit more information. And you do your best to make it soft and minimally threatening. But helping kids, boosting kids up and saying, you know, I know it's going to be hard, but I'm going to be there with you and we can do this together. And showing that you're calm really makes a difference for the child. There's research that shows that how parents cope is directly affecting children. So I think the more educated we are and prepared we are and the confidence that we have that everything's going to be okay, it helps the kids. That's what I would say to parents.
That's another reason why parents should read more, should be more ready and more prepared. And that's something you do in your blog. Tell us a little bit more about your blog and what are the parents reacting to all the information you're putting out there, which is a lot and it's great.
Thank you. Sure. Yeah, I had a lot of friends who would say things to me like, oh, I didn't know you could do that when you take your child to the doctor. And oh, I didn't know this. And it hurt my heart that I knew all of this and my own family and friends didn't know how to help their kids through just minor procedures like flu shots at the doctor. So I decided to do my blog because I just wanted to bring more awareness to the child life field as well. I think it's my passion for it is so great. And in the last 3 years, I decided to stay home with my kids. I have a 5, 4, and 1-year-old. He just turned 4 this week. So these are really formative years that I wanted to be home with them for. And I know I'm very fortunate to be able to do that. But stepping away from the child life field was difficult for me because I am so passionate about it. And I wanted to keep that going. And it's been fascinating because I've had a lot more time to dive into research and actually see the science that backs up what we do in the hospital, which I knew because I had studied it when I became a child life specialist, but more is coming out and it's really, really fun to be able to share this with parents. The response has been great. The thing that parents are loving the most, which I drive the most because I think it's the easiest thing that we can do in simple procedures is called comfort positioning. Often when we take kids to the hospital or to the doctor, they're laid down, or I call it pinned down, and there's staff on top of them to help just get a shot in. That was something that happened to me growing up, and I am still traumatized by the time I had to get one. 3 nurses held me down when I was 10 years old. And comfort positioning is something child life specialists really push in the hospital, where the parent is holding the child, sitting up in a safe position, feeling like a hug. So the parents are actually holding the child and not really, I mean, we're restraining, but not, right? So we're helping the child feel safe and comfortable while helping staff be able to get to that limb. And it is a really powerful, powerful thing because kids are feeling less threatened when they actually feel less pain when they're sitting up. There's lots of research to show that these comfort positions do a lot for kids and for parents and for staff. And so it's something that I think a lot of people don't know about, and I just wanted to get the message out there. And I think that has been the biggest response I've gotten, is parents are like, what? I can hold my child? And I think, too, like you said before, where we think it's staff's role to help kids when we go to the doctor, it's also putting power into the parents. They're realizing, oh, I need to ask for these pain management, or I need to ask for this or that, and I can be a more active role in my child's experience. So that's been fun too, to see parents kind of take on that role.
Of course. We will leave the links below, so for all the parents who are listening right now, you can go check Child Life Saver. Please, Kara, tell us about the name. Where does the name come from?
It's a rough one for me because I don't want people thinking I'm the Child Life Saver. That's not what I mean at all. Actually, the name does come from a patient experience. I was working in the sedation unit, which I think this child was going for either a PET scan or I was helping her with an IV placement. And I was preparing her for it, and we were playing, and she called me a doctor. And I looked at her and said, I'm not a doctor. Do you remember what my role is? And she said, I said, Child Life. And she goes, Saver. And it was in that moment that everything that I had worked for just really came full circle. And I wanted to cry. Sure, I can be a Child Life Saver. But that really is the way that I feel about Child Life. I think it saves us in the medical environment. And I wanted to share those Child Life saving tips with family so that they can use them too.
That's a beautiful story. And I think it's a great way to end this interview. But before we go, we asked some of the parents that work with us daily to help us develop our products. And we asked them to ask you questions they have. So if that's okay with you, I have some of them that I wanted to ask you. Yeah. Okay. So the first one is from Manuela, and she asks, how important it is for kids to carry their teddy bear to the hospital? I'm worried that he will reject it later because it could remind him of the operation.
That's something parents often think, is that it's going to help them remind them of that. It is true for some kids, but not for most. When we work with kids and we're about to like show a needle on one of their stuffed animals and show them what's going to happen, if we're ever projecting it on a toy, we ask them, who do you want to use? Do you want to use your favorite stuffed animal, or would you like to use something else? So we give that option because sometimes they don't want to see their favorite thing get hurt. But I think where you're going to the hospital, it's more of a form of comfort. I don't think they're going to associate it with the experience, because their association and their love for that stuffed animal was so much earlier, you know, and it's not going to change once they go to the hospital. It'll only give them more of that bond with that stuffed animal for comfort.
Of course. So don't worry about that, Manuela. That's okay. Andrea asks, is there a golden rule for the time it comes to talk to your kids like adults? My daughter is already 9 and I still see her as a kid.
I stopped, sorry. One second, my kids just walked into the room. Hey guys, go. I'm so sorry. Go. I'll be down in just a second. My husband's here. I didn't expect that to happen.
That's
like
okay.
The BBC one, you know. Did you see that one?
The news presenter, right? Yeah, that's so bad. Yeah.
So good. It's so good. Okay. I think you should absolutely treat a 9-year-old as a child. I never am a fan of talking down to children, like a baby. I don't use baby talk, you know, when they're toddlers or anything like that. I still would say, if we're honest with our kids and we're talking to them frankly and genuinely like this, that's how you would treat an adult too, right? And that's one of the things that Child Life Specialists really push for, is that we should be treating kids like adults in the sense that we're preparing them for what they're about to experience. That's what we would do for an adult. We would talk to them about it. We would tell them what's going to happen. We would tell them the options that they have, and then we would proceed with the procedure. And instead, we're just doing procedures on kids without saying anything. So I think in that sense, yeah, we need to speak to children like adults, but at the same time, they're still a kid and they still play and they don't learn like adults. So we have to use play to talk to kids, because if you sit down and have a conversation with them like you would an adult, it might go over their heads. And some of these kids, especially 9-year-olds, they might need to hear it 3 or 4 times before they really absorb all the information. So I would say speak to them honestly like an adult, but bring in the play aspect and keep it fun, because they're kids and they should still be treated like kids in that way.
Of course. Really, really good advice. And last one. That's a message from Joanne, who says, okay, this is not a question. Kara, I've just recently discovered your blog, and I think it's great that you're willing to share all this knowledge with us, especially for me, since we don't usually see any child life specialists at hospitals here in Spain.
Yeah. Well, thank you. That's so sweet. It really is. And I'm really impressed that I made it all the way to Spain. My goodness. Thank you. I would feel lost without child life. So that's really my driving force, is I want to put all of this education in the hands of the parents, even if I don't make anything, even if, you know, it's hours of work on my part. I feel like it's a small thing that I can do, because even myself, I feel threatened in the medical environment. And even with all of my training and background, it is the most vulnerable place for us. And I know families are so at risk while they're there. And so the little tips that I can give out, and the amazing resource you are to prepare children and families for procedures, is incredible. It's incredible that we have these resources now. But I think that we're also, you know, I can't believe that this is the only how far we've come. You and I are ready to make this happen, right? We're going to explode it. We're going to help parents know how to do this, and no longer are we going to treat kids like victims in the hospital. They're going to be partners with us, and they're going to be prepared for whatever comes their way.
That's what we fight for every day. So, yeah, I think we will make it. We will make it. And we will make sure that your blog gets to reach as many people as possible here in Spain. So we will leave, I said, the links below. Kara,
thank you it's so been, much. Thank
it's,
you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so, so much. I would love to keep in touch with you in the future. Yeah. It's been amazing to have you in Nixie Meets. And again, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, and thank you for all you do. I'm excited for the kids in Spain to have the resource that you're giving them.
Well, we have it.